Maybe that happened. I don't know.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell.
This is Global Patriot Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, starring the godfather of Global Patriot Radio, the dawn of dissenting discussion, the Italian infidel himself, Vito Esposito. Him and his hitman, Big Al, are here to whack the leftists, shake down the Democrats, and put out a contract on all the jihadis that are messing with the American family. And if you got what it takes to be a wise guy, you can get made right here on the show by dialing 319-527-6706. So, get ready to go to the mattresses and say, Mamma Mia, no Sharia, because Vito and Big Al are going to give you a radio show you can't refuse.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Global Patriots, you're listening to Global Patriot Radio, the Vito Esposito Show. I'm Vito. Our call number tonight and every Global Patriot Radio night is area code 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. And I'm joined by that no pork eating America lover, Al. Good evening, Al. How you doing?
Doing great, Vito. Good to be here as always. Hope you had a great week and figure out what the hell happened during this week.
Yes, had a good week. Not as good as Phil Mickelson. Holy smokes. In PGA news, the PGA Championship, which is the second leg of the four majors that the PGA has, was at Kiawa Island in South Carolina. And out of nowhere, Phil Mickelson emerged as the leader for 3 days, went into yesterday with a two-shot lead, and ended up winning, beating Louis Oosthuizen from South Africa and America's Brooks Koepka, who finished tied for second place. And Phil Mickelson, at the age of 50, the ripe old age of 50, notched his 45th PGA tournament win, including his sixth major, I believe, by capturing the 2021 PGA Championship. It was his second PGA Championship Cup, and gotta say, it was fantastic. I mean, it really was. First of all, he's the oldest player ever to win a major at age 50, and he won the PGA. He won a PGA tournament 30 years in a 30-year span. So he won his first one in 1991, his first tournament while he was at Arizona State College, and an official PGA win. And he won his 45th 30 years later, which is the PGA Championship, his second PGA win. So congratulations to him. Age 50, 4 days, held off the field at 6 under par.
Yeah, fantastic. And it was back and forth. And normally Mickelson has a reputation of falling apart on the last 2 days of a tournament. Just runs out of steam. But this one, he persevered and won. And Bruce Koepka caught up with him, and they were tied going into the last round at one point, and then Koepka dropped a couple. Mickelson got a couple of birdies, a real big birdie out of the bunker that I think was the changed the momentum. And hats off to Mickelson, who was out driving some of the young guys. It was pretty amazing. Not some, but a lot.
A lot, yeah. It was impressive. I'll tell you, I didn't see the whole tournament yesterday, but I watched some of it, and he was really playing well. And I thought for sure on 13, when he hit it, striped it down the middle of the fairway, he was going to finally conquer that hole after bogey and double bogey in all 3 days, and then boom, knocks it in the drink. It's like, oh my God. Very nice. And Tiger Woods sent a tweet out, and he says, truly inspirational to see at Phil Mickelson do it again at 50 years of age. Congrats. Very classy on the part of Tiger Woods. And Phil sent out a tweet, I've failed many times in my life and career, and because of this, I've learned a lot. Instead of feeling defeated countless times, I've used it as fuel to drive me to work harder. So today, join me in accepting our failures. Let's use them to motivate us to work even harder. And that was that was May 11th, 2021. So he found something. That was, 2 weeks ago? That was really, really cool that he, what a thought-provoking tweet, too, back on May 11th.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he essentially said that if you want good things, you got to practice and earn it. It's just not going to be handed to you. You got to work hard no matter what level you're at and whatever endeavor you choose to do for your life.
Hey, white lives matter, and I'm telling you.
old man white lives. But Mickelson, he could have some Irish in him, maybe. I don't know what he may not be white. I don't think
Scottish.
There are any white people. I think everybody's got a mix of something in them.
Yes, without this whole Marxist movement, this whole communist movement is garbage. It's all junk, and it's being fueled by the anti-American left crowd who hates America, who despises the U.S. Constitution. So, congratulations to Phil Mickelson. Great win, second PGA Championship, fantastic. Now he's got to go on and win the U.S. Open to complete the Grand Slam. So,
wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah, and the message, what I saw in the crowd, largest crowd since this whole COVID nonsense started.
Uh-huh.
Right? The whole place was packed, very few masks. Everybody was not. It was like the old days. It was great to see. The crowd was into it, energized, and no masks. It was beautiful.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah.
Isn't it cool?
So what happened between last week and this week? Did the world change? Masks were off a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, but today or yesterday, you don't need masks anymore. What changed in the world? I don't know.
I think people are getting tired of it. I think people are getting tired of the government's heavy-handedness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's to the point now where people the American people are seeing through the convoluted facade of disinformation and control by the government, because this is all it's been. This is all it has been. It has been nothing but a control factor. One, it was to get rid of Donald Trump. It was to find a way to tank an economy that was doing absolutely fantastic. Secondly, it emboldened the Chinese to the point where they took advantage of, one, the America economic collapse, as well as the European economic collapse. And the third part of it is, it is coming to light now. It's coming to light that the what was said about the Chinese virus coming out of the Wuhan lab is becoming more truth than the information being suppressed. And Congressman Matt Gaetz, of course, released some things on Twitter. And now Anthony Fauci, Mr. Flip-Flop or Dr. Flip-Flop himself, says that, you know, maybe it did come out of maybe this Chinese virus did emanate from the Wuhan lab, as it's being revealed now that four of the scientists at the Wuhan lab were taken to the hospital in November of 2019 with COVID-19 COVID-like symptoms. So all of this noise that, oh, you know, it's conspiracy theory and you don't know what you're talking about, and, you know, it could have been, you know, from bats, and it wasn't man-made. It looks like it indeed came out of the Wuhan lab. And the other thing, Baghdad Bob Jensaki was asked a question, you know, about why hasn't the Biden administration demanded answers, you know, and allowed for an investigation, especially since dictator Joe Biden has a great relationship with the dictator of the communist red Chinese, you know, President Xi. And she sidestepped it in great Baghdad Bob Jensaki fashion. And she stated that, well, you know, the WHO is looking into this and blah, 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 blah. All that noise, that wasn't the question. That wasn't the question. The fact is that President Trump recognized that the WHO is just a chimpanzee for the Chinese. And he understands, too, that the people that were on the boards of or who were involved with the WHO were also had ties to China. Now, when President Trump wanted to send the FBI over, obviously they don't have jurisdiction, but the Chinese rejected any American investigation. Why? What's the cover up, huh? Why? No, but now the WHO, okay, the World Health Organization, okay, well, we have to rely on them. They're as reliable as Dr. Fauci giving an answer on some basic question. I mean, you want to talk about flip-flopping? I mean, geez, you know, it's just what's incredible is that there's no accountability, and Fauci has no accountability. And suddenly under the dictator Joe Biden regime, you know, they've legitimized the WHO, who has failed the world miserably. And also the WHO has deep ties to the red Chinese, the communist Chinese. And somehow we're not supposed to look at that. Somehow we're supposed to overlook that basic fact. And it shows how corrupt these world organizations are. And that's why the legitimacy of this Chinese virus, you have to wonder, was this a planned attack? Was this a planned takedown of economies? Was this a posturing of the Chinese who were still pissed at President Trump for renegotiating the $535 billion a year trade deficit as the Chinese were abusing the American taxpayer? You know, all of this is way too coincidental. 12 days, you know, after the negotiation, the renegotiation of the Chinese trade deficit deal. And then, of course, the Europeans were on the same bandwagon. Well, they saw President Trump do it, so why wouldn't they do it? You know, this whole thing stinks to high heaven. And now, a year later, it's finally seeping out that the outbreak was confirmed at the Wuhan lab. God.
Well, that's good. So it was finally confirmed then.
Well, we have to rely on the World Health Organization, Al, because they are the esteemed body that is another ruse of the world.
Oh, so the three Wuhan scientists who contracted COVID back in November. Oh, okay, that's not a data point that we should all look at then.
Yes.
That's not a fact.
Yeah. Somehow, Al, you can't draw your own conclusion from that, you know. You can't draw your conclusion, you know. And it's
so
just,
now
it's,
we can
it's,
call it the Wuhan virus and not get a not get blocked from Facebook for using a term that violates community standards. So that's good.
See, isn't it funny? The Marxists are so shallow. The communists are so shallow. They lack the substance and the intellect, and they base their whole being on emotion. And when you start throwing facts at them, at some point the truth comes out. And a year later, okay, again, President Trump is being vindicated for basically telling it like it was, because, you know, we know how fragile the communists are. We know how fragile the Marxists are. I mean, the Democrat Communist Party, you know, is based on emotion. And when you start challenging that emotion, those poor fragile individuals, those snowflakes, they melt. And that's what's happening. And now, again, what's happened? President Trump is being vindicated. It is the Wuhan virus. It's the Chinese virus. It's not against the Chinese people. The Chinese government lied. The Chinese government is engaged in extra, whatever, world affairs that they are seeking domination as well. And you know what? They're posturing themselves during this pandemic. They're posturing themselves. They have ports on the east and the west coast of Africa now, and it should be a cause for some concern that the Chinese have established a military base, a military naval presence on the west coast of China of Africa. Not to mention the aggressiveness in the Chinese throwing money at Australia and New Zealand, and also posturing themselves in the South Seas. So, you know, we're South Pacific, and so we have a situation here now where the Chinese have used this Chinese virus pandemic to their advantage. And they are slowly flexing their power. And, of course, now we have the feckless fraud with the dictator Joe Biden, who is basically useless. He's a lightweight. He's a big man on campus mentality, but he's a lightweight. And, again, the Chinese are doing as they please. There is no accountability. Just recite the words World Health Organization. You know, they're doing the investigation. And don't look any further than that. Don't look any further into the conflict of interest that sits on that board of the World Health Organization. There's nothing to see here, okay, because dictator Joe Biden told us so, as well as Baghdad Bob Jensaki. What an embarrassment those two are. And, you know, in 130 days, Biden has done more damage, and he's taken policies back to the Obama-Biden regime. And it's funny, on today's news, I got to say this, gas prices are down 4 cents a gallon, you know, going into the Memorial Day weekend. And it's the lowest, they're back to 2018 prices. Excuse me, what? 2018, they're up a dollar a gallon from January the 20th. That should be the story. That should be the headline. That should be the narrative. But no, they're 4 cents a gallon less than what it was, or they're back to 2018 levels. What does that mean? And again, this media is so dishonest that you know, the fact is that Joe Biden is a fraud. The Democrat Communist Party is nothing but a destructive organization, and the American people are paying for it. But how do they the media justifies this reckless fraud by saying, no, the gas prices are back to where they were in 2018. I mean, that is the stupidest narrative I have ever heard. But it goes to show how much in the bag this media is. The media sought to destroy Donald Trump for 4 years. They looked at every way to take this man down, to dismantle him, and the phony narratives that they ran with. And now you have a feckless old fraud who was the person anointed to take over the presidency, and they're making all kinds of excuses for this guy. All kinds of excuses. I mean, if President Trump would have had his Justice Department allow police officers to go into houses and take a person's weapon in direct violation of the Second Amendment, and then the United States Supreme Court rules that it's unconstitutional to search and seizure a person's weapon, as a dictator Joe Biden has done, the media would have went absolutely apocalyptic. And nothing. There was nothing. Again, this administration is anti-constitutional, is anti-American, and the media is in the bag covering up for this feckless old fraud. And it's sickening for what we're seeing today. And it's so sickening that even the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, okay, now she's not going to grant interviews to white journalists. So in the Democrat Communist Party, it has become fashionable to be a racist. Racism is alive and well because if you're white, it's not right. Okay. If you're a person of color, if you're black, if you're Asian, she's going to grant interviews to journalists. But if you're a white journalist, you're not going to be granted an interview with the worst mayor in Chicago's history, Lori Lightweight. And somehow it's okay. It's okay today for the Democrat Communist Party to be racist. It's okay for them to blame white nationalists to label somebody a white supremacist. But if you're a white journalist, you don't get an interview with the dumbest fucking mayor in the whole world, which is, and I thought it was going to be, you know, Mayor DiCamio in New York, but Lori Lightweight is absolutely the dumbest fucking mayor this country has. She is the worst mayor. And for the Democrat Party to not speak out against this blatant racism, this blatant violation of the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, the freedom of the press and freedom of speech, is unconscionable. Nancy Pelosi hasn't said a damn word. Okay, Chuck Schumer hasn't said a word. AOC hasn't said a word. Bernie Sanders hasn't said a word. Joe Biden hasn't said a word. Okay, this goes to show how anti-constitutional this Democrat Party truly is, and they're a bunch of fucking racists, okay? And somebody needs to say it, because Lori Lightfoot is nothing but a racist. She's a hater, and the Democrat Communist Party has taken over thanks to Tom Perez and is now labeling people who are white off limits. I mean, I thought in 1955, okay, in 1960, when black people couldn't sit at the same counter, that was discrimination. And somehow today, if a white journalist sits at the same counter as a black journalist in Chicago, they're not going to be granted an interview with the dumbest fucking mayor in the world, okay, Lori Lightweight. How is racism supposed to be acceptable today? Racism and discrimination is alive and well in the Democrat Communist Party. Sorry, Al, go ahead.
Well, what if you're mixed race? Let's say that you have mixed race, like President Obama. He was of mixed race. He had white parents and black parents. Could he get an interview with Lightfoot?
Well, sure, because, you know, they're superficial. They're going to look at the color of his skin. They see that he's black. His skin color is black. Therefore, he gets in. If your skin color is white, okay, you're not going to be granted an interview.
Well, what percent? What's the cutoff percentage rate? I mean, if Obama's in and he's a half and half, half white, half black, then where do you? Is that the cutoff point? You have to be half and half. Like, what if I'm 30% black and 70% Eastern European?
Unless you're carrying your passport, but if you're carrying your passport that shows that you have this mix, I'm sure that she may reconsider. But Lori Lightweight is dumb, and so she's superficial, and she'll just look at the color of your skin. So unless you have your papers and you're white, she's not going to grant you an interview.
Well, that's racism. You can't do that.
It used to be considered racism, okay?
I mean, that's real racism. That's where you blacks, when they couldn't sit at a counter and eat back in the 50s when all that nastiness was happening. In fact, did you know that back in 1961 today, the Freedom Riders arriving at a bus terminal in Jackson, Mississippi, were charged with breaching the peace by entering white designated areas. And now, 2021, we have a black mayor doing the exact same thing.
Exactly. I mean, is she going to set up separate water fountains?
What the fuck? Huh? I'm sorry.
Exactly. No. You're exactly right. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's like, is she going to set up white and black and white water fountains? Asian water fountains? I mean, that's what they did in the South in the 50s and in the 60s. I mean, they're going to have a restaurant with a back door, you know, white only entrance. I mean, see,
press
this is
entrance.
Incredible. Yeah,
yeah,
press entrance.
She needs to have a press entrance at the Chicago, at her office for black press and white press, and then two different entrances.
WMAQ TV reporter Marianne Ahern, who is white, first tweeted about Lightfoot's decision on Tuesday, later calling the move outrageous in an interview with WGN Radio. To choose a reporter based on the color of their skin is really pretty outrageous, Ahern said. Citing a report by USA Today, does she think I'm racist? Is that what she's saying? Chicago Tribune reporter Gregory Pratt tweeted Wednesday saying he was granted an interview with the mayor but declined after her office refused to lift the condition. I'm a Latino reporter at Chicago Tribune whose interview request was granted for today, Pratt tweeted. However, I asked the mayor's office to lift its condition on others, and they said, no, we respectfully canceled. Politicians don't get to choose who covers them, Pratt continued. The Tribe, a Chicago-based digital news outlet aimed at reshaping the narrative of Black Chicago, according to its website, pushed back against the criticism directed at Lightfoot for prioritizing interviews with reporters of color. With this outrage, y'all are implying that Black and brown journalists aren't capable of asking the hard questions, the media platform tweeted Wednesday, along with a photo of one of their reporters interviewing the Chicago mayor. No, no. You see, this is how the communists change the narrative. This is how dishonest the communists truly are, okay? No, this is about racism. It isn't about black people asking tough questions, okay? Because Walter Williams, who isn't a journalist, would ask tough questions, okay? Lee, what's his name, up in Boston, I believe. What's his name? He would ask tough questions. It's not about black or brown people not asking tough questions. It's about blatant racism. It's about when a mayor of the second largest city in the United States, she's not going to go ahead and grant interviews if you're a white journalist. That's racism. It's not implying about asking questions. So these communists are flat out liars. They're anti-constitutionalist. These communists are anti-American. They are flat out lying. That is not what it was implying. Oh my God, this is absolutely sickening. What the mentality of the left wing today in America is anti-constitutional. It is anti-American. And for them, for the tribe, okay, to come up with that kind of a rationale as to why people are outraged, it's unconscionable what's being done today. And it's all being done, okay, under dictator Joe Biden's regime. It's all done in a manner of trying to dismantle the United States Constitution, to dismantle the First Amendment, because that's exactly what Mayor Lightweight of Chicago is doing. And it's not acceptable. It shouldn't be acceptable. She should be beaten down for that. Okay? And that's not a racial connotation. She should be beaten down for being a racist, for a mayor, a politician of a large city, okay, conducting herself in that irrational fashion. That is absolutely sickening. And, you know, former Representative Tulsi Gabbard accused Lori Lightweight of anti-white racism after the Chicago mayor announced Wednesday that she would only be interviewed by minority reporters for the two-year anniversary of her installation, sparking backlash from press corps members and other politicians. I ran to break up the status quo that was failing so many, Lightweight, who was black, tweeted Wednesday. That isn't just in City Hall, really. She's done some job, okay? She ran to break up the status quo for failing so many. So 14 people are dead last weekend in Chicago. And she's done nothing. Weekend after weekend, 6 people dead, 14 dead, 7 dead, 5 dead, 4-year-old killed in gunfire, 8-year-old killed in gunfire, 9-year-old killed in gunfire. And Mayor Lightweight has done absolutely nothing. She is an absolutely feckless individual who is a racist. And she's at one abhorrent woman. She added, this is exactly why I'm being intentional about prioritizing media requests from POC reporters on the occasion of the 2-year anniversary of my installation as mayor of this great city. Oh my God. I mean, do you think very highly of yourself? Or, I mean, can you be any more egotistical? I mean, you've done a terrible job for 2 years. Oh, but you did, you know, put on Halloween costume and hand out candy during a pandemic, okay? You did have somebody ride on a horse to show about the census. In the meantime, you have 15 people shot in Chicago, 40 people shot over a weekend in Chicago, you know, 12 people dead. But you jump on a horse and you have a, you know, support the census. I mean, this woman is terrible. She is an absolutely awful individual.
Yep, they need to have a recall vote because she cannot represent all people of Chicago fairly.
So tell me, how many people in Chicago? I mean, I guess Chicago is just made up of all white people then. I mean, I lived there for
5 years, and there were some white people there.
There was, huh?
Even downtown, there were some white people.
Huh.
So
I'll be darned.
I say that with confidence. There were white people and are white people in Chicago.
And I bet you that Mayor Lightweight received some white people vote when she ran for mayor 2 years ago. I guess that just goes discounted, too. I mean, obviously, I'm sorry, just... This whole Democrat communist movement today is a cancer on our republic, and it's being done intentional. And how this could be deemed acceptable, especially by a mayor of a large city in America, is unconscionable. And this is just a sign of what we are going through right now. You know, Joe Biden is a disaster. The Biden administration is an absolute disaster, but we knew that would happen because the big man on campus is a fraud, and somebody's pulling his puppet strings. And then you have things like this occurring with a blatant racist running Chicago and a feckless phony, you know, just like Biden. It's incredible. I mean, New York, you've got Mayor de Blasio. You know, communist de Blasio, another just a shameful individual. And then in Chicago, you got Mayor Lightweight, just Lori Lightweight. Just it's what a disaster. These communists are absolutely a disaster.
Well, that's Marxism, and Marxism is enemy number one in the United States of America, and this is just a good example. It used to be Islam, but now Marxism is the number one existential threat to our republic, and this is just one example of that out of many. So, and you know what the big tell is that the media is not making a big deal about this. All they're doing, a lot of crowing, but nothing happening.
You know, you're absolutely right. And see, this goes to show how complicit the Democrat Communist Party is, and their outlets. The media is silent, which, you know what, I have to give kudos to the media in Chicago, WGN, and the Latino gentleman who said, you know, this isn't right. And, you know, he's absolutely correct. I mean, we're talking about the First Amendment and freedom of the press. And, you know, for all the noise that the Democrat Communist Party did for 4 years, President Trump never excluded, okay, anybody from asking a question, even the dense, dumb DNC CNN. Okay, reporters. They showed how ignorant and stupid that they are. But the true oppressors of the First Amendment are from the Democrat Party. And notice I didn't say Democratic because there's nothing Democratic about the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party is not Democratic. It is communistic. It is Marxist. And Paul put in, don't forget about the lovely mayor, the lovely commie mayor of Rochester, New York. So apparently New York has a breeding ground of communists, whether it's Rochester, New York City, and of course you have Chicago. And it's pretty sad what we're seeing today. And speaking of sad news, dictator Joe Biden was not invited to the Notre Dame graduation. Now, the plagiarizing Biden comes out and says, well, I had a scheduling conflict. No, they didn't invite you to the 176th commencement ceremony at the University of Notre Dame. So, you know, here's the spin now, even including Baghdad Bob Jinsaki. Well, there was a scheduling conflict. No, they didn't invite him. You know, so there's the fact, okay? The fact is that not even, you know, dictator Joe Biden was invited to the University of Notre Dame's 176th commencement ceremony, and it was because of his abortion belief. So good for Notre Dame for sticking to some sort of principle. You know, every once in a while they do surprise you, these leftists. So, but Joe, quickly, I had a scheduling conflict. Oh, what was it? Had change your depends? I mean, I don't know what.
Scheduling conflict. The guy hasn't even had another press conference. He never even talks to the American people. Scheduling conflict.
How do you like that? I mean, the guy, he hasn't seen his shadow in how many days? I mean, you know, here we have, he's got a scheduling conflict. I mean, And again, the media covers it up nicely, you know. It's like, oh, that must be it. You know, scheduling conflict. Like what? Yeah, take a Napa. It infringed upon his Napa. I mean, he could sleep on Air Force One. I mean, geez.
He's like a groundhog. Come out, see where the shadow is to get the weather for the year.
Oh, my God. There is a, as you know, there is a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, but apparently the ceasefire does not pertain to Islamic jihadists around the United States and or in the United Kingdom for that matter. And the Islamists are going crazy right now, and apparently it's become fashionable now to seek out Jewish people and beat them up and express your anti-Semitic belief while you're beating you know, Jews to a pulp. It happened in New York City, and Al, you know the story pretty well, where two IDF soldiers, former IDF soldiers, were attacked and beaten on the streets of New York City, and apparently it turned into a melee where a bunch of Islamic jihadists joined together to beat up these two Jewish men. And it's this has become a fashionable thing with the Islamic jihads.
Yeah, the attacks on innocent civilians in New York have gone rampant. Now, the two individuals you're talking about, they are two IDF former soldiers that were in New York, and the story says is that they were speaking Hebrew, and some of the Muslims overheard the Hebrew, and then they went on the attack. Now, the two former IDF soldiers fought back and kept maybe 10, 15 Palestinian jihadis, kept them back by fighting back. The police tried to stop it. They weren't very effective, but these two IDF soldiers fought back valiantly, and then they ended up getting put in handcuffs and taken down to the station, soon to be released, but they had to go through the humiliation of being handcuffed and booked. It's a disgrace.
Yeah. Well, it is a disgrace. First of all, we're told that Islam means peace, and it means nothing of the sort. So let's just throw that out the window right now. You're walking on the streets of New York City, and because you're speaking Hebrew, that's an invitation to be attacked. And, you know, it's just these two gentlemen were minding their own business in broad daylight. And, you know, thankfully their training did save them. But, you know, they shouldn't have to walk in fear or be in fear walking on the streets of New York City, which used to be fairly safe, thanks to Mayor Giuliani, and even Mini Mike Bloomberg, kept that policy going to make the streets of New York City safer. Unfortunately, under Mayor Bill DiCamio, Warren Wilhelm, those streets of New York City now have become, you know, a free-for-all. Whether it is the two individuals who were walking, you know, minding their own business. Early Friday, just after midnight, the Israeli military put out an ominous statement. Oops, excuse me, got the wrong one. I popped up the wrong one. I apologize. It wasn't just the two IDF soldiers. It was also in Brooklyn. A Brooklyn man is facing hate crime charges after he allegedly destroyed a crucifix and burned an American flag at a church and later set fire to a yeshiva at a synagogue. Ali Alahiri. Is that a Mormon? Ali Alahiri. Age 29, was charged with criminal mischief as a hate crime. Finally, police said Alahiri knocked down and destroyed a large crucifix statue outside St. Athenaeus Church in Bensonhurst. Now, Bensonhurst, it used to be a large Catholic contingency there. I mean, a large Italian contingency, and of course, Catholic. And again, you know, the lack of assimilation on the part of Islamists is really telling, and it's really sickening. You're in the United States of America, okay? We're a melting pot of religions, Catholic, Baptist, Protestant, yes, even Muslim, Mormons, atheists. Okay, we're a melting pot. Now, if for some reason, you know, you can't adapt and assimilate to the multicultural, the multi-religious aspect of the United States of America, then please leave. Because if you're offended, okay, by a crucifix, you don't need to be in the United States of America. you know, the United States of America has a large Judeo-Christian population. And if you don't want to live the liberties and feel the freedoms that you're given, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, then really there is no reason for you to be here. And this is a chronic problem with Islamists coming into the United States of America. There's absolutely no reason to be tearing down a crucifix at St. Athanasius Church in Bensonhurst, or St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City, or St. Joseph's in Rochester, New York. Okay, there is really no reason for this to happen. And if you cannot assimilate to the multi-religious aspect of the United States of America, then the United States of America is not for you. Monsignor David Casado told CBS2 on the day it happened, it was a terrible morning. It was probably the saddest day in my life to see this desecration of a cross of Jesus and the desecration of the flag. And I noticed that Hamas Care is silent. Care has got an answer and an opinion for everything except for the taking out of al-Baghdadi and for the desecration of a cross and the symbol of Christianity in the United States of America. The Department of Justice says on Wednesday, Al-Ahiri deliberately set fire to a yeshiva and a synagogue on 36th Street in Brooklyn. Surveillance video allegedly shows Al-Ahiri piling garbage bags against the side of the building and lighting them on fire. Later that same day, Al-Ahiri, who is also allegedly attacked a man wearing a traditional Hasidic garb. So here you have it. Anti-Semitism in Islam is running amok in the United States. And, you know, you can also thank the antagonists, the instigators, the provocateurs like Rashida Motherfucker Tlaib and incestuous Ilhan Omar and that the other dumb one, Alexandria Cortez of New York. You know, these individuals, you know, they inspire this hate, instigate this hate. They magnify the problem even more because not only does the Religion of Peace book call for the hating of Jews and of polytheists, okay, but now you have the live voices like Linda Sarsour, like Rashida Motherfucker Tlaib, okay, and incestuous Ilhan Omar, who incite to violence these people. And, you know, the hate by the Religion of Peace is becoming very chronic in the United States, whether it's New York City or it's Miami, Florida, or Rochester, New York, or it's in Houston, Texas. The hate has become rampant with the Religion of Peace. You know, if you cannot assimilate into the United States of America, really then there's no reason for you to migrate to the United States other than the mission of Dar el-Harb is to make the United States or turn the United States into Dar el-Islam, the House of Islam. And we should reject this anti-Semitism. We should reject this hate against Christianity and Christian symbols. You know, these would be the first individuals to cry and to piss and moan and to put out press releases that Islam, you know, if you were to desecrate a mosque, they would be the first ones out there yelling at the top of their lungs, you know, Allah Akbar, and you shouldn't be doing this, and this is horrible. Blah, 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 blah. And in the meantime, the Islamists go around the United States and they bully and they beat people, and they also are now desecrating churches and synagogues. This anti-Semitism and this anti-Christianity, actions have to stop, and we have to speak out against this because this is not an isolated incident. Al, this has become a chronic problem.
Yep, and also in New York City, the big problem is blacks attacking Asians primarily.
Oh,
Not all, but most. Roughly 85% of the attacks on the Asians have been by black people, even though you wouldn't know that in the news. But if you follow every story, you'll see that a black person was, in fact, the culprit of the crime, and his race was, not reported with enthusiasm.
It's never reported with enthusiasm. You know, the whole fake, connotation is, oh, the Asian strong and white nationalism is the cause. No. The largest, the biggest problem with attacks on the Asian community is from African Americans. Oh my God!
Yeah.
Where is the news? Where is the news? You know, the misdirection and the lies that are emanating from, especially the leadership in America, and the leadership, not necessarily leaders, but they're members of Congress. Incestuous Ilhan Omar released a statement Monday condemning the far-right ethno-nationalist Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu, claiming that he is now responsible for the 1,505 casualties in Gaza, including 200 deaths, 59 of them children. He has leveled an entire residential buildings, targeted journalists and civilians alike in direct violation of international law. The statement added at least 10 Israelis, including two children, have also been killed by indiscriminate Hamas rocket attacks. To be clear, this is also a war crime. So I would challenge incestuous Ilhan Omar and Rashida Motherfucker Tlaib, and the entire Democrat Communist Party, who seems to be blaming Israel for the deaths in Gaza, when in fact they want this to be a one-way street. They, the Islamists, the left-wing politicians, the Democrat Communist Party, looks at this as a one-way street. Hamas, a terrorist organization, as labeled by the State Department of the United States, Hamas, okay, Islamic jihadists who call for the annihilation of Israel, launched an offensive into Israel with the express intent to kill Israelis. Because Hamas believes that the annihilation of Israel and every Jew is incumbent upon them. And somehow the Israelis must sit back and take the 3,200 rockets and missiles that were fired into Israel. Somehow the Israelis were supposed to sit back, okay, and accept all 3,200 rockets. Well, actually 3,000 rockets, because 200 of those rockets that Hamas fired actually ended up in Gaza. And that's what killed a lot of, Gazans. But somehow Israel should just sit back and take it. And when Israel, a sovereign nation, is attacked, they fire back. They fight back, excuse me. And why not? You punch somebody in the face, you can sit there and take it and take another punch and take another punch. And finally, your nose is broken. You're bleeding all over the place. Or you can fight back. And Israel chose the right path. You fight back. Okay, because the cowards of Hamas hide behind women and children. The cowards of Hamas hide in schools and hospitals. Okay, and suddenly now they want to proclaim that they are the victim. Yet they are the ones who launched this attack on Israel. Israel has every right to defend itself. And to incestuous Ilhan Omar, who's nothing but an agitator, a lying anti-Semitic agitator, okay, who was spewing false information. They weren't targeting journalists. Again, Hamas will fire rockets and missiles from civilian sites. And Israel didn't have to let Hamas know or the people in Gaza know when they were going to fire their rockets, but they gave them times to evacuate buildings. And one of those buildings housed the AP. But it was a Hamas building. Hamas, a terrorist organization. Hamas is a terrorist organization who is seeking to annihilate Israel. The Israelis weren't targeting journalists. That's a flat-out lie. But you can't expect anything less from incestuous Ilhan Omar, because she is a liar. She is a cheat. She is a simple fraud. She's an anti-American who seeks to have to play on someone's emotional heartstrings, okay? Because she's a fraud herself. And, you know, Omar and Tlaib are from the same ilk. If Israel defends itself from the aggressors of Islamic Jihad led by Hamas, suddenly they are the victims. So Israel has a right to defend herself, and Israel did just that. And if 200 Gazans died, so be it. It's Hamas who inflicted this damage. It is Hamas who's responsible for the deaths in Gaza. But Hamas doesn't want peace. That's nope. The thing. Hamas does not want peace.
But Town Hall also reported there was a shocking phone call between the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, and Gazan. That reveals the entire conflict in a nutshell. Did you hear about this call?
No.
Oh. Well, there's a short but shocking phone call between the Israeli Defense Forces and a Palestinian in Gaza reveals the entire conflict in a nutshell, according to Ben Shapiro. In the recording, the IDF is attempting to warn about an impending strike, pleading for the man to evacuate the building before the bombing because civilians are present. So the call goes like this, quote, "I can't get all of the people out. I need at least 2 hours to get them out," the Palestinian says. "Listen, we are going to bomb the building," the member of the IDF replies. "You want to bomb? Whatever you want. You want to bomb? Bomb whatever you want," the Palestinian responds. "No, brother, we need to do everything we can so you don't die," the IDF member said. "We want to die," the Palestinian answers. "But you have a responsibility for children's lives," the Israeli pushes back. "If the children need to die, they'll die," the Palestinian counters. "God forbid, God forbid. What do you want to die? Why do you want to die?" the soldier asks. The IDF, the Israeli soldier asks. And it ends like this. The Palestinian responds, "This is how we reveal your cruelty," close quote. "This is how we reveal your cruelty." So he was ready to die and kill children for PR, for public relations. That is so screwed up that I can't even wrap my head the psychopathic behavior of this Palestinian who would not only kill himself, which is prerogative, but to kill children as well, to prove a point or to make a public relations stand, that's insanity.
Well, Al, Golda Meir had it right, didn't she? "We can forgive the Arabs for killing our children. We cannot forgive them for forcing us to kill their children. We will only have peace with the Arabs when they love their children more than they hate us."
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was in 1968, and 50 years later, Golda Meir's statement is still true.
Yep. Now, this 30-second clip should have been front page across the nation on every news channel for a week during that whole conflict. Or the 14th, mm-hmm. or however long, it should still be on the front page. But the story was essentially spiked by the mainstream media because you stay on top of the news and you hadn't even heard about it. The story popped up in one place and it caught my eye. And that's the only reason that I saw it. It didn't come across my normal news sources. How pathological is that thinking? We want to die.
Yeah, it's very pathological, but isn't it ingrained in them, though? I mean, that's ingrained.
I don't know. "You kill me, so I can show the world how cruel you are. That, all I can say is that is so fucked up.
It is. It is.
Yet this is the mindset of the Palestinian people. Not all, but clearly this is just some random guy in a building that they're going to bomb, which means there probably was a tunnel underneath or some legitimate reason that they had to take out the building. Now, this guy could have been Hamas. Who knows? But he figures, hey, if I die, I'm going to show how cruel the Israelis are, and then I'll go to Jenna as a martyr, Jenna being heaven, paradise. And the kids will go, too, because they will also go to paradise because that's what Islamic doctrine teaches. So life has very little value as long as you die in jihad to further the cause of Islam wherever you may be.
And just sacrificing their own. Hey, let's take a break. And I want to take a break because Golf Dogs did a fantastic intermission piece for us. And I need to take a break right now for a couple of minutes. And I thought this would be an absolutely perfect time to play this. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about the rallies in Illinois and Orlando, the Palestinian jihad rallies. We'll be right back.
Can't handle the truth.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it?
You. Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is.
Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you gotta be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
We've preserved for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Important principles may and must be inflexible.
Somewhere along the line, you changed. You stopped being you. You let people stick a finger in your face and tell you you're no good. And when things got hard, you started looking for something to blame, like a big shadow. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
It's a nasty truth that those who seek to inflict harm are not fazed by gun control laws.
And regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who would trade our freedom for security have embarked on this downward course.
Nothing ends here. Our hopes of our journeys continue.
We must act today in order to preserve tomorrow.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape from. This is the last stand on earth.
Well, gentlemen, when the shit hits the fan, some guys run and some guys stay. Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
And now, back to Vito and Al.
When the shit hits the fan, some guys stay or some guys run. I'm just getting warmed up.
Way to go, Bigfoot. That's awesome.
That was actually from Golf Dogs.
Golf Dogs. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That was an
outstanding job.
I love it. I love the quotes from Reagan. Reagan, of course, was the master. He had it right. Act today to preserve freedom tomorrow. So got to give him a lot of credit. So thank you, Golf Dogs. That was a great intermission. It was timely, too. Well, Big, you can take credit for it, Big. No one else will know except for Golf Dogs. So there was a rally back on, what was it, May 15th?
Yes.
May 15th in Orlando. And in support of Hamas, a terrorist organization is designated by the United States State Department. The anti-Israel sentiment is rampant around the United States, Illinois, Miami, Florida, New York City, and in Orlando, Florida. And there's a prima donna by the name of Rashida Mubarak? Is that her name?
Rashida Mubarak.
Rashida Mubarak, who seems to be the up and coming, Democrat Communist Party star, and she's been leading the pack in Orlando, the Democrat Communist Party. I'm sorry. I was reading Bigfoot's place. I will not take credit for someone else's work. Who do you think I am? Joe Biden? No. I'm sorry. Rashida Mubarak is the darling of the Democrat Party in Florida. And she's someone to watch, but she's also a strong anti-Semite. She's aligned herself with Rashida Tlaib, another
yes.
anti-American, anti-Semite.
Works in her office, no less. So she is well connected.
Yes, and that's where the irrational behavior the irrational behavior and the anti, obviously being part Gazan also lends herself to being anti-Israel. And of course she doesn't know any better, but this is the individual who's leading the way. So there was a Hamas rally in Orlando, and about 6 minutes, 7 minutes of the video. And this is the type of rhetoric that's being spewed in and around the United States of America. And, you know, it's one thing to have free speech and your freedom to peaceably assemble. This is Islam using the Constitution to destroy the Constitution. This is using the First Amendment to destroy the First Amendment. And here you have Rashida Mubarak, who is, I guess you can say, a junior Rashida Tlaib, and her hate that is being spewed. Sit back, listen to it, and I'll get your comments on this.
Nakba Day, May 15th, when the Palestinians mourn the creation of Israel and continue calls for her destruction. Watch this hate event in Orlando, Florida, led by Rashida Mubarak, who is the finance director for Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Democrat from Michigan.
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Free! Are you all tired of coming to demonstrations on a Nakba?
No!
Yes.
Yes!
Are we tired of coming to demonstrations when Gaza is being bombed?
Yes!
Have we had enough?
Yes!
Y'all, inshallah, this is the last Nakba.
Inshallah.
This is the last Nakba. Our people will be free.
The Last Nikba is a call for incitement to violence against Jews and is inspired by the Palestinian people's founding government document, the Hamas Charter. The Hamas Charter states, quote, Israel will exist and continue to exist until Islam will obliterate it, just as it has obliterated others before it.
From the river to the sea!
Whose land is it?
It's the Palestinian land. The hell with Israel. No Israel. No more Israel. Okay?
So you want Israel obliterated?
Filthy.
The slogan, From the River to the Sea, Palestine Will Be Free, is a call for a Palestinian state in the territory where Israel exists today, between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, which is nothing more than the call for the complete destruction of Israel and the genocide of every man, woman, and child.
All right, we have someone in the audience that's a Zionist, that a provocateur who has a camera that's standing in the front. So I just want people...
Where you at, man?
Right here. Just to cover him up, but no fighting, all right?
Is that him?
Yes, that's him.
Where are you here?
All right. So free, free Palestine!
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 Don't touch me. We're not about to touch you.
Why
are you here?
Hello, look here.
This is public land.
Yes, yes, yes!
Says disgusting, vile, genocidal maniacs should be locked up and left in cell to rot. Good description, Paul. And this is not Gaza. This is not the West Bank. This was Orlando, Florida. Al, you did mention about the last Nikba, what it meant, but again, what is the last Nikba? What does that mean? And also, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. This seems to be a popular chant in America today, whether it's Orlando or Illinois or Miami or California or Houston, Texas. What exactly is this chant and with the relevance of it?
Well, the Nikba is the great catastrophe. It's Arabic meaning the great catastrophe. So what is the great catastrophe? Well, Israel was granted statehood by the United Nations on May 14, 1948. On May 15th, five Arab countries tried to wipe Israel off the face of the planet and failed. So the great catastrophe was on May 15th, 1948, Israel kicked ass militarily and defeated their five Arab neighbors. The great catastrophe, the Nikba. So when Rosh Mubarak is talking about the last Nikba, she's actually saying that in order for the day of catastrophe to no longer be relevant is that Israel must be destroyed along with every man, woman, and child that lives there, Christian, Jew, Arab, otherwise.
And from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
Well, that's another, like you said, that's a chant that's heard throughout the country, throughout the world, actually, even on the Temple Mount in Israel. From the river to the sea, Israel must be free, or Israel, from the
Palestine.
River to the sea, Palestine will be free, means no more Israel, because you're going from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, and what's in between that? The state of Israel. So in order for Palestine to be free, Israel, again, has to be wiped off the planet. And then they had another chant in there. It's and one of the chants in Arabic, Beru Badam Mafik Ya Islam. Beru Badam Mafik Ya Islam means with our life, with our blood, we will save you, O Islam. So that means that the followers of these Palestinians will give up their life and their blood in order to save Islam. So they're not even worried about Israel. This is about Islam. This isn't about land. This is about Islam versus the Jews. And there was another chant in there that Usama Dakduk helped me translate. And it was Al-Quds Rahim Shahada Ba-Yamin. To Jerusalem we will go to be martyred in the millions. To Jerusalem, we will go to be martyred in the millions. This is being chanted at that rally and rallies throughout the country. That means that an army of a million people will go to Jerusalem, take it over, and kill themselves. Or they'll die trying and they'll martyr themselves in the name of Islam. That one scares the crap out of me the most. That is so pathological. There aren't words to describe it.
Because that won't be just the Gazans. This would be, you know, Islamists themselves. I mean, you're talking about not just, you know, the Gazans going to Jerusalem, but the call is for Muslims to go to Jerusalem.
Exactly. Now you got it. It's not just Palestinians. It's all followers of Islam.
And, you know, we heard the – and Big pointed out, you know, we heard the chant, Allah Akbar – you know, did you feel threatened at all at any time while you were there?
Well, yeah, when Rosh Mubarak, keep in mind, I was standing by myself. I had some friends in the back, but it was the first time ever in an event like that, and they were a little freaked out. But I'm in the middle of 750 to 1,000 very angry Palestinians. I've got my little camcorder on a tripod, and I'm wearing a hat, and that's it. Nothing, I'm not wearing anything provocative. And when Rosh Mubarak got up and said, we have a Zionist in the crowd, a provocateur, and to cover him, what that meant was is that right after she said it, I was surrounded by 15, 20 people with flags and signs, bumping me, elbowing me, jabbing me, pushing me, and that's assault. And there were no police to be found. I called 911 twice on my phone to get a uniform down there. And the police never showed up. Very bizarre. So, yeah, it was very intimidating. This time more so than other times because anything could have happened. It could have gone south very quickly. Luckily, it didn't. But the footage is quite compelling, I believe.
Now, there's something that – see, this is another point that I'd like you to expand on to give the people, the audience, an idea here. There was something said in passing, and I'm not sure if people picked it up, but the location of this rally, the Palestinians, the organized rally, this wasn't a public place. This wasn't on Islamic property. This was in Orlando, but it was on public land. And there seems to be an irrational fascination by the Islamists when a camera is present, that basically if you're in a public place, they can be filmed, can't they? And you're in a public place, correct?
Absolutely. There's no expectation of privacy in a public rally or a public space. Correct.
And as a member of the media, you could be there, filming just the same way that the local news stations are filming.
Right. Anybody can go with a camera. Everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's there filming. So there's no everybody's a journalist for the most part. If you got a phone and able to pull off the movies, you're a journalist.
Yeah, you see, this is the part that's really it's getting a bit out of hand in America because it's one thing to be to use the First Amendment, the freedom to peaceably assemble, but if you bring that assembly to a public place, your function is open to the public and it's open to be filmed. And isn't it funny how Rashia Mubarak really likes to incite her followers. Not only were you called a Zionist, which was a provocation in itself, to incite her followers, but a provocateur. And you're a provocateur by what? By filming the event? You weren't saying anything. I mean, I watched the video several times. You didn't say anything. You asked a couple of questions, open-ended questions to get an idea. They weren't slanted, and yet you're a provocateur. And so, obviously, Rashia Mubarak is a phony, and the fact that she's aligned with Rashida Tlaib is all you really need to know about her anti-Semitic and anti-American views.
Now, here's one other point that's very interesting are the people the supporters of the rally and the organizing members. Now, get this, the Florida Young Democrats, the Young Democrats of Orange County, the Orlando Democrat Socialists of America, POTR Latinx, Central Florida Climate Action, the Florida Student Power Network, the Florida Palestine Network, but the most important ones, Florida Young Democrats of Orange County with the President Alex Whedon named. Now, remember when we had Claire on a while back and she was talking about this red-green axis between the Democrat Marxists and the jihadis?
Yes. Expand on that. Our listeners may not remember that, so please expand
on
that.
The red-green axis is an alliance between the jihadis, the followers of Islam, and the Marxists within the Democrat Party. Now, they formed an alliance against ideologically, they really have nothing in common. They formed an alliance to bring down our republic and to weaken our republic. And this is proof positive that this red-green axis does exist and is very, very powerful. I mean, when you got the Florida Young Democrats and the Young Democrats of Orange County, along with the Democrat Socialists of America, that is all that you need to know.
Oh, my gosh.
Marxism, Islamism is working together to weaken our republic. And this impacts everybody. This isn't just about Israel and the Jews and that little, what, 400 square miles of land in the middle of the desert? No. This is bigger. This is bigger than that. This is a fight between Marxism and our republic, and that's what it all comes down to. And this is a lot of what's missed. But what's interesting are these supporters in that point where if you take anything away from this, now you know that the Democrats and the jihadis are working together hand in glove in order to destroy our republic. And even the roosters are crowing about it because it's that big of news.
Well, you know what? It is that big of news. And you see, this is the issue right now that people don't understand. The Islamists have infiltrated the Democrat Party in America, and it's perfect because the Democrat Party has contempt for the United States Constitution and our constitutional republic, as does Islam. Again, Omar Ahmad of Hamas Care said it best: Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam the only accepted religion on earth. Now, the Quran to be the highest authority, that means it has to supersede the United States Constitution. And if the Democrat Communist Party has contempt for the United States Constitution, it makes for a great marriage with Islam, because Islam has total contempt for the United States Constitution. But it's important that they align themselves, the Islamist movement, aligns itself with that same ideology. And, you know, with the Democrat Communist Party being a bunch of whores that enjoys money, the best thing that Islam has to offer is money. They throw money at the Democrat Communist Party. The Democrat Communist Party willingly accepts this money, and since the Democrat Communist Party doesn't have any values, it's great that they align themselves with the Muslim Brotherhood and all of their front groups. I posted the Center for Security Policy's Red-Green Axis document. It's 65 pages. It was put together by the Center of Security Policy that Claire Lopez was talking about, which regards to the refugee program and also Islam and the World Relief Organization, Southwest Key Programs, the Baptist Child and Family, Welcoming History Organizing Organizations, the detailed explanation. So in the world, the Welcoming Economies of the Global Network, read it. It's worth your time to read the 65 pages of the Red-Green Axis. And this is Islam and the communist movement in America, and their joint forces. And this is exactly, you know, Rashid Mubarak is that rising star inside of this movement. To think that the Democrat Socialist Party of America was present at this. I mean, think about that. The Democrat Socialist Party and the Florida Young Democrats helped sponsor this. It should be alarming to everyone, because if it's happening in Orlando, Florida, it's happening in Houston, Texas. It's happening in Chicago, Illinois. This is happening all across the United States: Detroit, Michigan; Hamtramck, Michigan; Los Angeles, California, or Southern California. It's very prominent. So, but this is something that's not just happening in an isolated incident. This is happening, and it's escalating. And it's pretty frightening for our republic right now.
Yep, and we've been talking about this for years. So here it is, just another example as the world turns.
As the world turns. You know, this is probably a good time to rehash something, and that is, and I know Paul does it on his show, but we're talking about the explanatory memorandum. The process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process with all the world word means. The Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad, in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. And hence the red-green axis. This is the mission of the Islamist movement, of the Muslim Brotherhood movement. This is the mission in America. So this is not an isolated incident. This is using the First Amendment to destroy the First Amendment. So what did, were you able to interview anybody while you were there, or did you get pretty much get shunned? I mean, this is 6 minutes, but what anything else happened?
I was pretty much shut out. They had two people following me around like glue. They were with me the whole. They were not with me, but they were blocking anybody from talking to me and telling me, right, do not engage with them. The only thing was that one gentleman said that Israel must be destroyed. He was just one guy in the audience who said that. Just somebody there holding a sign.
Just one guy, sure.
Just one guy?
Yeah,
just one guy out of many who dared to say a couple of words. But I tell you, this pales in comparison what I went through to what those two guys up in New York. And then there was another Jewish guy up there who was in the black hat and the black jacket and looked Jewish. I mean, like Hasidic Jewish. And he got beat up, too. He got attacked just for being there, right in front of a cop, no less. So, yeah, this is pretty rampant, and this never used to happen, like you said, in New York City under Rudy Giuliani. He cleaned all that up, but under the Marxist de Blasio, New York has gone to the sewer, and it's so sad to see. It used to be a great city.
Yeah. So I have a question for you. Why is it that the only Muslim activists we hear about in America are women, Omar and Tlaib, in Congress? We hear nothing from Andre Carson. Rashida Mubarak and Linda Sarsour are women. So why is that? You know, we don't hear anything from Andre Carson. He seems to be keeping a low profile. How is it that the women like, you know, Rashida Tlaib and incestuous Ilhan Omar and Linda Sarsour are front and center?
So loud, outspoken, shrill, and annoying, and yet we never hear from the guys?
Yeah, there you go.
Probably because the men are smart enough to let these loud, obnoxious women take all of the fire while they can work in the background running influence operations without all the negative backlash of being an outspoken, toxic individual like Rashida Mubarak, Rashida Tlaib, or Omar. They are toxic, and yet they run the Democrat Party. So it's a double-edged sword.
I know, they're so toxic, they're being removed from committee assignments, and they're being shunned from the United States House of Representatives. No, I'm just kidding. Nancy Pelosi endorses this type of anti-Semitic rant, anti-Semitism, this anti-Israel mentality. Same with Schmuck Schumer. You think, Schmuck, he's got an answer for everything. Okay, of course, he always was combative to President Trump, and yet You have these two women, incestuous Ilhan Omar and Rashida Mubarak Tlaib, who speaks so ill of Israel, who is demeaning of the Jewish people, and there's absolute silence from Chuck Schumer. And again, this is very telling. If the American people just take a step back, this is quite telling of the Democrat Communist Party. The Democrat Communist Party don't eat their own. The Democrat Communist Party just sits back and they allow this to happen. And you know, and the Republicans should take a message from this playbook. But of course, when you're part of the same team, it really, you know, when you have a couple of people who step outside the box, like Matt Gaetz, who they tried to character assassinate in these last 2 months, and of course, Marjorie Greene, who they've tried to chop her knees off since January 3rd, 2021. And Marjorie Greene's a thorn on the side of the establishment, much like President Trump was. And so when you have these, you know, you would think that the Republican Party would sit here and learn from, you know, how pathetic the Democrats are and how they allow this anti-Semitism to foster and fester inside their own party. And it's acceptable because, you know, when there's when the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, doesn't hold her or don't hold her own members accountable for their actions, it speaks volumes. It speaks volumes because silence is consent, and she's consenting to the hateful anti-Semitic rhetoric that's being spewed by Rashida Motherfucker Tlaib and incestuous Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar is an absolute disgrace, an anti-American who, you know, here's a woman who could have used her migration to America as a positive influence, but she's nothing but a phony and a thief. She is so dishonest. She's a dishonest individual. And it, you know, it what it does to these Islamic migrants who come to America and have this cancerous mentality, this anti-American mentality. And you would think that the Speaker of the House should hold her people in higher esteem, but she approves of this anti-Semitism. She approves of this irrational behavior. And, you know, the Republican Party, again, silence, except for what, four members? I mean, why aren't they calling these two members of the United States House of Representatives out? Why aren't they calling the three, AOC, Cortez, why aren't they calling her out as well? These people are lunatics, man. They are, you want to talk about psychopathic. These are psychos. These are anti-American radicals. You know, McCarthy would have ridden these people out of Congress back in 1950s because this type of this mentality would not have been acceptable, especially this anti-American mentality, which seems to be the way of the Democrat Communist Party today. It's really quite disgusting. It's very troubling that these people have this type of mentality, and for the attack on our ally in the Middle East, Israel, it's unbelievable. It, you know, 3,200 plus rockets and missiles fired into Israel, and Israel has a right to defend herself, and Israel does. And retaliates, and because of that, defense that Israel shows, now they are the aggressors, or they are. We are told they are the aggressors by these anti-Semites, these anti-Americans, and you know, you want to talk about war crimes? The war crimes are by Hamas. You know, where is the OIC? Oh, that's right, they're too busy beating up on Israel. Where is the United Nations? Oh. That's right. They're too busy beating up on Israel. I mean, you want to talk about every paragraph of the UN Resolution 1618 being violated by Hamas, and yet the 56 Islamic states are silent? You know, President Trump and Jared Kushner had it right. You know, they spent a year and a half trying to bring Hamas to the table for peace. You know, peace is just it's a soundbite. And when President Trump and Kushner saw that Hamas was just blowing smoke and there was no peace on the part of Hamas, what did they do? They pushed them aside and they sought peace with the Arabs, and they were getting it. Now this whole deal has been screwed up by the anti-Semite sitting in the White House, that feckless fraud dictator Joe Biden. And now look what we have. Look what's happened just in the last 120 days since January 20, 2021. I mean, what about the Abraham Accords, huh? Where you finally had the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Saudi Arabia seeking peace. And, you know, Hamas didn't build these rockets and missiles by themselves. If their people live in squalor, that means they have no money. Where did they get these rockets and where did they get these missiles? Huh? They're not sophisticated enough to make these rockets and missiles. And why isn't anybody questioning about Iran funding this terrorism, this act of terror on a free state? Huh? Where is a sovereign state, Israel? You have Iran being the aggressor. The OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, is siding with Iran because of their anti-Semitic belief system. This is, you know, the UN is useless. It should be called the Useless Nations because the anti-Semitism that's emanating from the Useless Nations with their sub-organizations like the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, there is nothing cooperative about that organization. The only cooperation is between the 56 Islamic states and the Palestinian territory. That's it. And the damage that they are, the terror that they're inflicting, forget about the terror that they are endorsing, you know, against civilized people, the UN should be all over this. And they're the ones that helped set up Israel. That's even more bizarre through this whole thing. The psychopaths at the United Nations are the ones that help set up that sovereign nation of Israel, and they've turned their backs on them in what, 73 years? It only took 73 years, and the Useless Nations turned their back on this very state, a peaceful state, no less, a productive state, while Hamas keeps their people in squalor, and they get arms from Iran, a state terrorist theocracy, okay? And where is the world on this? Huh? Why aren't they calling out Iran?
Well, Biden is in favor of Iran. He likes the Shia. Because don't forget, the Abraham Accords, which you mentioned before, the Abraham Accords isolated the Palestinians. Because the Sunnis, Jordan, Bahrain, and the Sunni countries that are over there, they are scared to death of Iran because they know that the Shia want to fight them and take over their land. So they formed a peace agreement with Israel, whom they hate, and the Americans, whom they hate, because they know that we're going to act as their shield to the Shia. And what that did is it isolated the Palestinians. And now all of a sudden under Biden, all that went to the wayside. Biden started giving money by the millions, if not billions, back to Iran and the Palestinians. And then the first thing that we see is nothing but violence starting again. That's exactly where the problem is. Iran is the problem. And Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, is backing the Iranians and screwing over our allies.
Boy,
made the wrong decision again. Yeah.
But did he make the wrong decision? I mean, now wait a minute. Okay, let's not give, you know, dictator Joe Biden that much credit. This was a conscious decision. This was a conscious Obama-Biden decision, Obama-Biden-Kerry decision. This is a policy back to Obama, Biden, and Kerry. And let's make no bones about it. John Kerry is back in the picture, and the fact that the United States is throwing American taxpayer money back at Iran is no coincidence. This isn't from a broken down policy from dictator Joe Biden. This is a conscious decision that the Obama Biden administration did back between 2009 and 2016, with the help and the aiding and abetting of John Kerry. So this is the same policy that's back. And look, he put John Kerry back in a position where he didn't have to be Senate confirmed. So he's some sort of national security advisor for global climate change. But he's also advising on national security. What a way around things. You know, this is one thing about, you know, the witless dictator Joe Biden. They knew how to circumvent the process and put these anti-Americans back in a position of power, making these decisions that are contrary to America's value system. And, you know, by putting John Kerry back in this position, and now you've got, you know, funding Iran to the billions of dollars. Why are we funding Iran, a state sponsor of terror? You've got people, you got the Iranians, you know, they can't buy a loaf of bread without bringing a wheelbarrow full of money to the market. And yet you have the theocratic Islamic terrorist regime in Iran, you know, funding Hamas and supplying them with rockets and missiles to wipe out Israel. And somehow the OIC doesn't see it that way, or refuses to acknowledge it. And obviously they won't, because like the Democrat Party, the OIC protect their own. And so let's look at it that way. The Democrat Party in America, the Democrat Communist Party, they protect their own. The OIC will protect all of their 56 member states and the Palestinian territory, irrespective of what is done. You know what? You attack Israel? That's fine. It's funded by Iran. Iran is a founding member of the Organization of Islamic Cowards, a cooperation. So obviously, it's a sanctioned event. Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Well,
Joe
said.
Biden is not that. Joe Biden is not that smart. So.
Well, he's made mistakes for the, however, what, 50 years that he's been on the government tit. He's always been on the wrong side of every decision. He even made John Kerry. I thought John Kerry was the climate czar. But he's really doing just back channel Iranian negotiations, just as he did all through President Trump, violating the Logan Act, which we've talked about several times.
Well, think about this, okay? So this is the irrational exuberance of the Democrat Party. So John Kerry is the climate change czar, right? So now
yeah.
John Kerry has changed the climate in the Middle East. He's changed the climate from a peaceful and a progress, you know, to move towards a progressive movement into the 21st century, and he's changed the climate back to the terror-driven policies of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation by emboldening and empowering Iran again as a theocratic terrorist regime of Iran. So he's the perfect climate change czar, right? He's changed the climate in the Middle East to hate Israel once again and to kill Jews. Hey, that's John Lurch Kerry. He hates America. He's an anti-American, and hey, he's anti-Israel as well. I mean, let's face it. If you support a state sponsor of terror, Iran, over a democratic, progressive, free state of Israel, something's wrong with you. And there's something deeply wrong with John Kerry. There always has been. Maybe something blew up near his head a couple of times. If he indeed did see any type of action, but he's one destructive individual, and the destruction of Israel is on the minds of course, Iran, and they make it known.
he negotiated in Vietnam. He negotiated with the Marxists, the communists, North
yeah.
Vietnamese, who we were fighting illegally. And he got away with it then. He has been negotiating with dictators, Marxists, and just evil people throughout his whole career. What is it with these Marxists? Jimmy Carter did the same thing. There was never a dictator that he didn't get along with. And then President Trump, he gets bashed for playing the game with Kim Jong-un and simmering him down by giving him quote-unquote, the visibility and respect that he knew that he needed in order to not to act aggressively, and it ended up being the right play. He had a
yep.
President Trump daddy complex, so President Trump gave him a little bit of Trump daddy, and he was happy. No. Granted, that's kind of... Yeah, I stick by that. I think that's a good analysis.
And you should. And I'll tell you why you should. Because what's not spoken when that is said, okay, when that's brought up, is that President Trump was able to get the remains of 53 American soldiers who were killed in action during the Korean War. He got 53 remains of American soldiers returned to the United States, giving families in the United States closure. You know, while that's not, that may not be much, but 53, getting one human remains of American soldiers back to give families closure is a success. But 53, and all he did was bring Kim Jong-un to the table, you know, and like you said, show him a little bit. He is a dictator. He's a leader of North Korea, but he was able to get to the table and bring the soldiers' remains back. That, in my book, was admirable. But, of course, you know, what do we know, right?
Well, President Trump knew how to deal with people, just like with the Abraham Accords. He figured out, all right, well, the Sunnis hate the Shia hate the Sunnis. That's one thing that we can use as a wedge issue. So we'll go in, we'll protect the Sunnis, and all they have to do is sign a peace agreement with Israel, and they will get our protection and arms. We will sell them jets and guns and all this war equipment, which we never would have before, in technology, if they sign a pact with Israel, and we will be their protector against the Shia. And they did. And it isolated the Palestinians, made them weak and irrelevant until now. So, yeah, President Trump knows. Hell, he had to navigate doing his developing work all over the world. He had to know how to navigate and deal with people to get through problems. And New York was a great that was the major leagues of having to deal with government bureaucracy and egos and having to pay the right people off to do good things and to build things and be a builder and to bring money and prestige to New York City. And he did it. And not only did he do it well, he excelled at it. He took whatever money his father gave him, which in comparison to what he has now in the billions, was very meager seed money. And he doubled it. And his children also are very industrious. They're not Hunter Bidens. They are not spoiled Michaela or Masha, whatever the hell her name is, Obama.
Yeah, right.
Or even Chelsea Clinton. Yeah, they're not spoiled little prima donna kids. These are hardworking adults. So anyway, I just thought that's an interesting comparison.
No, you know, you brought up some good points, and the kids alone. The Trump kids, you know, you don't hear anything, you know, they are industrious. They really are. They're smart. They're smart individuals. And they're certainly no Hunter Bidens. That's for darn sure. Oh, my God.
Well, you want to hear something crazy on a whole different subject that's on the front pages of some papers around the country?
Go ahead.
That, you know, this defund police thing that we've heard so much about. And we all said, oh, that defund, but why would anybody in the world want to defund the police? Because there's a thin blue line between a civil society and chaos. Well, the Marxists want to defund police, so they're actually doing it. And the headline is, 1 year later after George Floyd, new police teams respond to crisis calls. Delaney Kerwin is not a cop, but she helps respond to 9/11 calls. Kerwin, a mental health clinician, will often spend an hour or two with someone in crisis who spawned a 9/11 call much longer than a typical Orange County Patrol duty officer could. So now they're bringing in mental health professionals to field these calls with domestics that are of a psychological issue. Now, how they're able to do that, I don't know, but it seems like an incredible waste of money. Because the police should be going to these domestic issues, which we know, if you know of any police officers, they'll tell you that there are two things that scare the crap out of a police officer. One is going to a domestic call, because you never know what's going to happen. And two is stopping a car in the middle of the road in the middle of the night at any time, because you never know what's going to happen. So now they just made police officers more at risk by now the police have to not only protect these mental health professionals, but now they have to work around their world, and then they have to add that into the equation of not only dealing with people who are nice one minute and then they become violent, kind of like that girl who was knifing her friends and then the policeman shot her. And now the policeman's job and career is at risk. Not only at risk, his whole life is at risk because he runs the risk of possibly even going to prison for saving a girl's life.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just another story of how this defund police is ruining our and making us less safe with our law enforcement. Because let me tell you, and I'll repeat it again, law enforcement is a thin blue line between a civil society and chaos. And what do the Marxists want more than anything? Chaos. They want chaos and revolution. So what do you need to do to get chaos and revolution? You need to weaken the police force.
And they've sold that. They've sold that around the United States, including Kansas City, Missouri. I saw that last week. Kansas City is another. The commission there voted to, the council voted to defund the police. It's like this Marxist movement is really afoot. And, you know, I'll tell you, the danger, it was truly dangerous to have, you know, Beijing Biden installed as president, but there was a reason for it. And I tell you, I still think that Barack Hussein Satoru Obama is behind this. He has total contempt for the United States of America and for our constitutional republic.
Yep, and if you want to go to school, get a book called The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen. That is the one book you need to read to get a handle on Marxism, its roots, and how Marxism is operating here in America.
Hey, tomorrow, right here on Global Patriot Radio, we have Eric from Kafiristan with Radio Free Kafiristan. Wednesday, Hank Jones and Poly Sports. Hank's got a sports and politics show. Thursday, we got the esteemed gentleman, Paul Sutliff. Dr. Sutliff has the Sutliffian Report at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Friday, Dr. Andrew Harrod, Islam in Focus. Saturday, Minister Simon Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Sunday, Eric from Kafiristan is back with his interfaith dialogue, the real interfaith dialogue. Check it out, 2 p.m. Eastern Time it starts. And Monday, Al and I will be back with Mom of the Indo Sharia. A couple of other shows to check out on Blog Talk Radio. One is Annie at Southern Sense Talk Radio. Her and her wonderful sidekick are on at 1 p.m. Tuesdays and Fridays. Curtis kind of helps her out there and, you know, keeps her honest. You know, Annie can kind of get a little bit, you know, stray a little bit. And you've got Curtis reining her back in. and then Chief, The Simple Facts of Life, 3 p.m. Tuesdays, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, that's 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Chief, Simple Facts of Life. And check out the Simone Nicole Show Wednesdays on Spreaker. That's Spreaker at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. That's on Spreaker.com. If you want a break from politics and from Islam and you want some self-help stuff, Simone Nicole Show is fantastic. And check us out at on Twitter, Hash Brown G Patriot Radio, Hash Brown Mama Mia No Sharia. Al, any parting shots?
Adios, amigos. See you next week.
Hey, you all be safe out there. Liberate yourself. Throw your mask away. But hey, be safe. Be aware of your surroundings. Thank you for listening and joining us this evening. Thank you, Bigfoot, our big patriot, www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com, Ducky Northwest, Paul Sutliff, Dr. Sutliff, and you've got Annie, Southern Sense Talk Radio. Nice to see you, Annie, and Paul Sutliff was in the chat room earlier, and on our switchboard, the beautiful and esteemed lady, Sue from New Mexico. Good night, folks. You all be safe out there. Thank you for joining us. Ciao.
Yes, it was.
Frank to the T.
You got skills, baby, skills.
Hey, I can read a clock, man. I know.
Yep.
I can read a digital clock, man.
Dude, well, hopefully next week we'll be able to start talking about these audits that are going on in Georgia and Arizona and Michigan, because I think they're starting to bear some fruit.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Arizona audit's not getting much play, is it?
No, nowhere. Just amongst our people it is, but I don't know how much of it is wishful thinking and bullshit or what's real. So that's why I'm kind of keeping a lid on it. But I just read an article just popped up, liberals in meltdown mode as Georgia audit intensifies. So,
well, look, you know something? I have to – you've got 157 counties in Georgia, and you had two counties alone, two little counties in Georgia – where they had to flip, where they found irregularities, and the vote total, the vote tally changed to, 6,000 plus back to Trump in two little counties. And apparently Cobb County did an audit, and I think it was Cobb County, and they said their audit was right. Okay, so now you have 153 counties now that need to do, they could do audits on. Can you imagine 6,000 votes flipped in two counties because of voter irregularities, some sort of irregularity in the voting system? You know, this doesn't sound right. This whole thing was, it stunk to high heaven. It stunk. And if Maricopa County, if it comes out Maricopa County was really bad, ladies and gentlemen, we have a problem.
A very interesting problem. And hopefully, do you recall the entire election and put the country in chaos? I think you have to do that. And then you got to throw Biden in jail, I guess. I don't know. Who do you throw in jail? I don't think they have enough jails to put all the people who would be breaking laws to make all this big conspiracy happen.
Well, in my opinion, that's why it was important to have both houses of Congress and the executive branch run by the Democrat communists, because they'll put a squash to it. Nothing will happen until 2022. Now, if you bring it before the Supreme Court, how will the Supreme Court vote? Well, you know what? Given how Justice Roberts handled the voting issue, you know, back between November and January, we have an indication that they won't be doing it. The Supreme Court won't do anything. So I think that it was very important to get the installation of, you know, Dictator Joe, because you've got Nancy Pelosi in the House and you've got Schumer in the Senate, and then you've also got McConnell in the Senate, which they'll squash everything. I firmly believe that. I mean, look what they did. Look how they sold January the 6th, okay? An insurrection. But, you know, the people in Cuba are sitting there going, you know, that's an insurrection. I'm going to show you an insurrection. These people, there was no way, shape, or form that was an insurrection. Was it an uprising? No. Was it a breach of the Capitol? Yes. But then again, Sue from New Mexico, there's stories coming out of Twitter that are showing that somebody – unlocked the magnetic doors at the Capitol.
Yeah, the Capitol Police were letting them in on one side of the building, and they all stayed in the ropes. In fact, your wife even said, "Do you see these people that are staying within the yellow ropes like they're on a tour? What's wrong with these people?"
So I talked to an acquaintance friend of mine today, and I haven't talked to him in I hadn't talked to him since the election, before the election. So it was back in November is when I spoke to him last. And he like you, was at the, he was in Washington, D.C., January the 6th. And he didn't go into the Capitol, but he saw, and it's funny because there were so many parallels of what he saw and what you saw. Anyways, he said he walked over to the Capitol, and he was watching the Capitol Police waving people in. He goes, he was standing on the side, and he saw the Capitol Police move two stanchions. And he goes, I started taking pictures of it. He goes, I don't know why. He says, but I started taking pictures, and there's the Capitol Police, and they were waving people in. He goes, I saw this firsthand. He says, the next thing I'm hearing about, there's riots at the Capitol, and there's an insurrection. He goes, he's from a foreign country. He goes, if that was an insurrection, that was pretty bad. Because the Capitol Police let the people in.
That's funny.
It is funny.
It's funny and sad because the information is out there and it's been verified, but there's no traction.
Exactly. And it's all by design.
Mm-hmm. There's power in those who make the news.
Yeah. See, it was no coincidence. You know, for Dictator Joe being installed, there is none. There's no such thing as a coincidence when it comes to these politicians. I mean, Dictator Joe doesn't see a shadow for 7 months. He speaks to 24 people, and there could be 27 people, but the three circles are empty, and it's mm-hmm. there's no way, shape, or there was no enthusiasm for this guy, and. Here's a feckless fraud for 50 years who was awful. And he had nothing. There's no substance to the man. And he's nothing but a liar and a cheat. And suddenly he's president of the United States? Nah, I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Yeah, so what do you think will happen? Let's say, just for shits and giggles, let's say that these audits end up showing that there was, hold on. Okay. All right. Give me 10 minutes.
Can I leave her?
Yeah.
And let her bark?
Yes.
Now it's
yes. Bark. Sorry. Welcome to that okay. sliver of my life.
It's got to be rough.
So let's Sorry. Say for shits and giggles. Oh, it's all right. All right. Yeah, no, let's say for shits and giggles. These audits show that there was rampant enough fraud to change the election because it was pretty close. It was a very mm-hmm. tight margin. What happens next?
Nothing. Yeah. What they'll do is they'll say, okay, we're going to make sure this won't happen in the next election. And okay, so how do you do that? Do you pass H.R. 1, which doesn't allow for voter ID? You know, because all we hear about from the Democrat Communist Party is voter integrity and every vote should count. And in this case, every vote did not count. As a matter of fact, it was fixed. So, but nothing happens because the House is run by Democrats, the Senate's run by Democrats, and the executive branch is Democrats. The only thing that could flip this is the Supreme Court. And under Roberts, it's not going to happen. Epstein Island. No, it's not going to happen. Epstein Island.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I think there needs to be a constitutional crisis.
I
more
agree.
Than ever. There's got to be some consequences for stealing an election with fraud. If there's none, we're doomed. If that H.R. 1 passes, then it'll shield that type of behavior forever.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, crazy times. So hopefully next week we'll be able to talk about this.
Well, and here again, that goes to the point of the dismantling of the republic, the dismantling of the Constitution. So it creates a constitutional crisis, which they breached, and we've already had breaches of the Constitution. We've already had infringement upon all five components of the First Amendment. We have the dismantling of the Second Amendment. We have the infringement upon the Fourth Amendment, and then we have the Tenth Amendment, states' rights being infringed upon. And, you know, it's governors like, well, like DeSantis and Abbott and Noem, who are pushing back against this oppressive federal government. And they're doing so in a fashion that they're the minorities now, but they are pushing back. I think we're in a constitutional crisis now. So.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree with you 100%.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure. Thank
As
you
always.
For... Sue, I hope you're doing well. It's nice to see you. And thank you for tweeting out our show today. And I hope you're feeling better. So we'll talk to you guys next week. Hey, it's Memorial Day weekend, so have a good Memorial Day.
Yes, absolutely.
Gonna cook up some ribs and have some hamburgers.
There you go. Some baked beans.
That's all, folks. Adios, amigos. Thank you, Music Block Talk Radio. Goodbye.